The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I wish you would interview Joe Biden like you interview me. It would be so good. You know what?
I don't mind it.
But when I watch him walk out of a store and he's walking with ice cream, and the question the media asks him, what kind of ice cream, what flavor ice cream do you have? And he's in the midst of a scandal.
He's not.
And he's taking...
He's
of course
not.
He is,
no.
Leslie.
Come on.
Of course he is. It's the biggest, second biggest scandal. So, the biggest scandal was when they spied on my campaign. They spied on my campaign,
there's
Leslie.
No real evidence of that.
Of course there is.
No.
It's all over the place. Leslie,
sir,
they spied on my campaign and they got caught.
Can I say something? You know, this is 60 Minutes, and we can't put on things we can't verify.
You won't put it on because it's bad for Biden.
We can't things we can't verify.
Leslie, they spied on my campaign.
Well, we can't verify that.
It's been totally verified.
No.
No spying. No corruption in the Biden family. That was 7 weeks ago, that interview with Leslie Stahl. Just 50 days ago, there was no evidence at all of Biden family corruption. Nothing. The New York Post was censored. Couldn't even get into their Twitter account. Videos, tweets taken down or flagged with a red flag of caution. 50 days ago. And then just a couple days ago, on a dime, it's as if the media, they're circling the Biden family like sharks. They smell the blood. What a change. How do you explain this? And there's no one, so far as we can tell in the clips that we're hunting for, there's no one in the media that are even willing to talk about why the change. It's as if what was being said 7-8 weeks ago, that it didn't even happen. Now, all of a sudden, suddenly, it's not just Hunter. It's the brother, too. Jimmy. Jimmy's being investigated. And it's getting awfully close to Joe Biden, the fake president, the fake president-elect. We have a lot to get to on today's program. We're going to try to... Some of my clips are running a little bit long, so hopefully we'll have some time toward the end to talk a little bit about the prophet Elijah and his stay with that Gentile widow woman in 1 Kings 17. Lots of lessons to take away from that. And, of course, we'll follow up on the Texas lawsuit. The garbage lawsuit, as the news media is calling it, a seditious lawsuit, in fact. We'll come to that here. That was the brief, I guess, for Pennsylvania and the others, was filed yesterday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and we haven't yet heard from the Supreme Court. But back to the media. There you had Leslie Stahl saying, no evidence. No evidence of spying, no evidence of corruption. Here's CNN's Christiane Amanpour also before the election, clip 7.
Why don't you want to report this? This is one of the most powerful families in Washington. Biden family. And you're okay? You're okay with our interests being sold out to profit Joe Biden and his family when we're suffering during a pandemic from communist China? He's doing shady business deals with communist China. You're comfortable, okay?
As you know perfectly well, I'm a journalist and a reporter, and I follow the facts. And there has never been any issues in terms of corruption.
I love the arrogance. You saw it with Leslie Stahl. Listen, we're 60 Minutes, okay? We only report facts. What was the CNN reporter yesterday? She was wearing this this sweater that said "Facts First" or something like that. Of all days to wear something like that, what a farce! What a circus! Here, as I say, 50 days ago, they could care less about facts. There you hear, Christiane Amanpour. This is CNN. There she is saying, look, I'm a journalist, okay? I'm a journalist. I'm a reporter, and I follow the facts. And there was some Republican spokesperson saying, why won't you follow the facts to what the Bidens are doing? They wouldn't do it because at that time, the higher-ups were saying, cover it up. We've got to cover it up. And really, James O'Keefe's undercover reporting of CNN has fully exposed this as well, how they were going to approach the election fraud, what they were going to downplay, what they were going to draw attention to. So obvious. But until they were told, look, let's go after him now. And they did turn on a dime. I'll get to that in a second. But before that, before this week, well, then it was just carefully cover everything up. Censor it. Blot it out. Delete it. Here's the montage that includes not only the Biden people, but the news media before this week. Clip 10.
Have said there's absolutely zero basis to the accusation that I acted any way inappropriately or that my son did.
This whole smear on Joe Biden comes from the Kremlin. That's been clear for well over a year now.
There are these issues with the Bidens that are absolutely invented, imagined.
A series of lies peddled them by Rudy Giuliani.
Last week, Giuliani and former Trump official Steve Bannon provided the New York Post with unverified emails.
Every major national, international, and local news operations looked into it has said it's a lie.
Operation looks right out of the Kremlin playbook.
The FBI, we know, is investigating whether they are or are not tied to Russian disinformation. A Kremlin-constructed anti-Biden propaganda campaign.
50 high-level intelligence agents, people who have worked in the intelligence agencies, came out and said that this is most likely Russian propaganda.
There is no controversy about my son. It's just all a lie. It's a flat lie because...
For me, or to me, these are distractions. I mean, the American people don't want to hear these smears against my family.
His buddy, Rudy Giuliani, he's being used as a Russian pawn. He's being fed information that is Russian... That is not true.
Has all the hallmarks of a foreign interference campaign.
Unverified accusations about Hunter Biden's financial dealings.
Out is that Joe Biden has an ally in the news cycle, which is if President Trump tries to shift the turf under the Biden family for the purposes of muddying Joe Biden, the news cycle keeps returning to the central piece of this campaign.
And he's in the midst of a scandal.
He's not.
And he's taking...
He's
of course
not.
He is,
no.
Leslie.
Come on.
Of course he is.
Here is conspiracy theories are very entertaining, including that Joe Biden did nothing wrong. No money changed hands to the Biden
president. That argument has been debunked.
So there's not been a scintilla of evidence pointing out anything's wrong.
There's not been one scintilla of evidence.
You know, there's not one single bit of evidence, not one little tiny bit to suggest anything done was wrong. You know that.
You know that, right? Not even a tiny, tiny little bit. Not one scintilla of evidence. It's been thoroughly investigated. All the news media outlets have looked into this. They've covered it in depth. This is nothing more than a Kremlin disinformation campaign spearheaded by Moscow. Rudy Giuliani, he's a Russian pawn. He's an agent of Russia. We don't want to forget that before the election, of course, it was the New York Post leading the way with some of those articles, but it was primarily Rudy Giuliani that was feeding the New York Post with the content that nobody else wanted, that nobody else looked into, that everyone, as you just heard there, everyone was saying there's no truth to it. They were implying that the laptop itself was somehow a fake. that the emails, they'd use the word allegedly, emails that allegedly came from Hunter Biden. And then they, even when they started finding the recipients of those emails, people like Tony Bobulinski, he came forward with those three smartphones, turned it all over to the FBI. Even when that came out, it was still allegedly, he wrote such and such, allegedly, say Rudy Giuliani or Steve Bannon. That was what, 7, 8 weeks ago? Listen to the Daily Beast coverage from yesterday. It says the Justice Department's announcement on Wednesday that it was investigating Hunter Biden for what he deemed to be tax affairs took root several years ago with a much broader inquiry that included possible money laundering, according to a report by CNN. CNN's leading the way now. CNN before the election, Jake Tapper, he couldn't even get into some of it because it was so seedy. It was just so disgusting. It was just all rumors and hearsay, gossip, and so on. I'm not even going to dignify it by bringing it up. And now Jake Tapper is leading the way. He's going for the jugular. Indeed he is. The Daily Beast says that inquiry reportedly fizzled, leading instead to a probe on tax matters that is now being led by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Delaware. It says, but evidence of the larger probe was apparent in the markings on a series of documents that were made public but went largely unnoticed. There were documents, as it turns out. There was evidence, as it turns out. There was evidence in the public domain. But, says the Daily Beast, nobody really noticed it. Nobody noticed it. It was all over the place. If you would just look. Well, by all over the place, it was a lot of evidence at the New York Post. It was a lot of evidence with Rudy Giuliani everywhere that he went. Anyone that would interview him. Listen to this report. Here again, this is a news agency that doesn't count. They don't count as far as the propaganda media is concerned because it's Sinclair. And that's more conservative. So Sinclair is a propaganda network. And yet listen to this report. This is it's a fairly long clip, 2 to 3 minutes. But this is October 29th. So 5 days. 5 days before the election. Here's James Rosen on his Sinclair network. Clip 3.
Good evening from Washington, where we are told a team of FBI agents conducted an important interview within the last week and collected a wealth of digital evidence as part of a far-reaching probe into the business activities of Hunter Biden and his associates, one that could carry significant political implications in the race for the White House. A Justice Department official confirmed to Sinclair that back in 2019, the FBI opened up a criminal investigation into Hunter Biden and his associates that is focused on allegations of money laundering and remains open and active today. Tony Bobulinski, thank you for joining us from Los Angeles. Separately, Tony Bobulinski, the former business partner of Hunter Biden, who has cited emails, documents, and other evidence to allege that former Vice President Biden was more deeply involved in his son's business dealings in China than either man has acknowledged, told Sinclair he was interviewed by the FBI in Washington on October 23rd with counsel present for about 5 hours, with up to 6 agents in the room at one time. He said the agents carefully examined the digital evidence captured on the 3 cell phones Bobulinski made available and told him he will be brought back for additional questions.
They do list me as a material witness within the entire FBI on their computer systems, and it was a very cooperative, deep dive into all the facts across that time period.
In connection with what were you listed as a material witness?
In connection with the discussion of the Biden family, CFC, and other operations around the world involving other countries.
CEFC is the Chinese energy giant, effectively an arm of the government and the Communist Party, with which Hunter Biden pursued a $10 million deal, according to Bobulinski's firsthand account and a wealth of evidence now in the public domain. It was from CEFC, according to a Senate report, that Hunter Biden's law firm, through a company he helped set up, received approximately $5 million in the summer of 2017.
Joe, what's that all about?
This president paid 50 times the tax in China.
It was prior to the final presidential debate in Nashville on October 22nd that Bob Ulinski, a former Naval Nuclear Command officer with a Q-level security clearance, now a wealthy corporate investor, first went public with his charges about the Biden family, including his account of two face-to-face meetings with the former vice president. The FBI interviewed Bob Ulinski the very next day. Did you get the sense that the FBI had already been working on these related issues and matters prior to you making that public statement in Nashville?
My impression is everyone in that room was very aware of the sensitivity of the parties involved here and potential multiple impacts to this country.
Vice President Biden has denied having any knowledge of his son's overseas business dealings, but the authenticity of the digital evidence that Tony Bob Ulinski has cited has not been disputed by the Biden campaign.
That was 5 days before the election. James Rosen talking about this far-reaching probe, how that they had opened up, the Justice Department had opened up a criminal investigation in 2019. Now we know it was 2018. But Bob Ulinski, he's revealing all this. He has the press conference. The FBI meets with him the next day. What did he say? Six agents? And they were all very familiar with the case. Very familiar. That was October 23rd. He goes on Tucker Carlson for an hour-long interview on October 27th. The New York Post is putting all of this information on its website, blotted out of Twitter, of course. But this was all reported. And then we get to the middle of this week, and you hear from CNN and from all these other sources, Hunter himself had a press release on Wednesday saying, I am being investigated for tax affairs. He said he found out yesterday. Isn't that what he said on his press release? He said he found out the day before he was being investigated. Even Hunter Biden turned on a dime. He was playing along. And if anybody knew he was being investigated, it would be Hunter Biden and the rest of the Biden family. Well, it was just announced in that report right there. He met with six FBI agents. So for whatever reason, and keep in mind, Hunter Biden's statement, it came through the Biden-Harris transition team. So it was this transition team, the fake president-elect, that came out with the statement. Then the father followed after that and said, my son's the best. And then the news media, they are just running with it. Like I say, they're like sharks circling the meal. They're ready to go in. They're ready to take down the Biden family. That's what's happening here. Who's behind it? Brad McDonald had a trumpet brief last night. He kind of was talking on a separate subject. But the point that he made, all roads lead to Obama. Think about the Joe Obama montage that we have. We played that the other day. Joe Biden saying, yeah, extensive voter fraud. And then Obama saying, I'm quite happy to push the buttons from the basement. I mean, they're already throwing him under the bus. They come right up to the safe harbor deadline Tuesday. And then the very next day, here comes the statement. And no doubt the Biden family came under a lot of pressure to go ahead and make this known. And then, if you didn't notice, as soon as the statement, right, it was tax affairs. That was it. I mean, something that doesn't sound really too serious. And the media, they were prepared with their in-depth investigation. Actually, there's a lot more to this than tax. They already knew. They already had the story. It was as if they were given the signal, and then everyone knew that Politico, CNN, New York Times, Washington Post. It's just like the Steele dossier, only there's truth to these investigations and to this corruption. But as far as getting the signal, same thing. It tells you a little bit of something about the propaganda media. They really are arms of the Democrat Party. They're activists. They're not concerned about the facts. Like Leslie Stahl said and Christiane Amanpour, listen, I'm a journalist and I'll go where the facts lead me. They stayed away from the facts before the election and even for a few weeks after. And now they're going after the Biden family. It's interesting, too, when you just look at President Trump and some of the things he was saying in the lead up to the election and even years ago, and just how spot on he was. For one, for the media to say there was no evidence of this and before the election, I mean, well, let me just read the thing again from the Daily Beast because it's hilarious. It says, evidence of the larger probe was apparent in the markings on a series of documents that were made public, but went largely unnoticed. It just didn't get any attention, or it just wasn't noticed. In the days leading up to the November election, according to two individuals familiar with the matter. So this is an expose. Two individuals familiar with the matter tell us that the information actually was out there before the election, but it was largely unnoticed for some reason. Well, not by the Trump campaign. Listen to this montage. President Trump himself, all along the way, in rally after rally after rally before the election, he was out there exposing this corruption. Clip 11.
As vice president, he closed down 10,000 factories while raking in cash from corporations that moved jobs overseas, and his family got rich. You know, what do you think where Hunter walks in and he walks out with $1.5 billion to manage for China? Joe Biden has been blatantly lying about his involvement in his son's corrupt business dealing. In other words, Hunter was being paid for access to his vice president father, who was specifically put in charge of Ukraine and Russia. I was pressing Joe Biden to tell the truth because the corrupt lamestream media right back there, all those cameras right back there, they're corrupt, and they refuse to write the story. They're trying to protect him. He got thrown out of the military. That's unfortunate. He didn't have a job for a long time. His father becomes vice president, and he's making millions and millions and millions of dollars a year. Hunter raked in a fortune from China while Joe Biden was giving China all of our jobs. And by the way, take a look at his brother. His brother all of a sudden is building a big housing development in Iraq. Joe Biden is, and always has been, a corrupt politician. He always has been. And as far as I'm concerned, the Biden family is a criminal enterprise. So a giant trove of emails show Hunter Biden making deals, setting up meetings with his father, Joe, and using the office of the vice president for a for-profit cash machine. Because Joe knew Joe's getting a piece of everything. They have it in the email, 10% and 50%. But Joe is far more corrupt than Hunter.
I'll tell you what, this laptop is a disaster for them.
Biden and his cronies, what they've done is a disgrace. And frankly, what the media has done is more of a disgrace. Think of it. There's never been a more egregious assault on our people, on our country, than what the media is doing, because they refuse to write about his corruption. And they'll write anything. They'll write falsely about us, but they refuse to write about his corruption.
That's just a small sampling. We had to actually cut a couple minutes out. It just goes on and on and on. He was exposing everything. Everything that the media decided to start writing about 2 days ago. You heard it if you went to a Trump rally. You heard every bit of it. He knew about it before, long before the rallies this campaign season. If you remember the phone call, remember the perfect phone call made to President Zelensky in Ukraine? That was July 25th, 2019. The president said, President Trump, that is, there's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people want to find out about that. So whatever you can do with the attorney general would be great. Biden went around bragging that he stopped the prosecution. So if you can look into it, it sounds horrible to me. And you know what? President Trump was impeached for saying that. He was impeached by the Congress of the United States, the House of Representatives, because of what he said about the Bidens in a phone call, because of what he said about, you know, you should look into the Biden family. I notice he just tweeted out this morning, President Trump. He said, now it turns out that my phone call to the president of Ukraine, which many, including me, have called perfect, was even better than that. I predicted Biden corruption, said to call the attorney general, who perhaps knew of the corruption during the impeachment hoax. A little bit of a dig there at AG Barr. All of this going on. The hoax. The coup attempt. The rolling coup attempt. It continues. And you've got one man who's willing, as my father has said, who's willing to stand against it. He comes out of that phone call, and this was the latest line of attack. Let's take him out because of what he said in that phone call. This was some kind of a quid pro quo, and he was going after a political opponent. And notice too, this is before we had any idea of who the Democrat nominee would be. I mean, the Democrats settled on Biden. What was it, the early part of this year or maybe the last part of last year? The phone call is in July. He comes out of that and, of course, comes under a fierce and vicious attack from the media. He gave a press conference in October 2nd, 2019. He had just met with the president of Finland. He came out to talk about a few things with that. And, of course, the media just pounced on him. This is, again, leading up to the impeachment inquiry. This is October 2nd, 2019. And the subject of Hunter Biden and the Biden family comes up. And listen to Donald Trump well over a year ago. Clip one.
Look, Biden and his son are stone cold crooked. And you know it. His son walks out with millions of dollars. The kid knows nothing. You know it, and so do we. Go ahead.
That's Donald Trump, October 2nd, 2019, pointing at the media, saying, you know it. And they did. They knew it before the election. They had all the stories ready to go on Wednesday. As soon as Hunter made the statement, as soon as he released it, they were ready to go. And that's Donald Trump, not only saying the truth about the Biden family, but he's telling you the truth about the corrupt propaganda media as well. Exposing the media for what it is. So here they come up to this week. They turn right on a dime. Why would they turn on Vice President Biden so quickly? Well, obviously, they got their marching orders from above, and they probably thought they were in the clear. Now that the safe harbor deadline is over, all of these lawsuits they've been reporting have just been dismissed right and left. There's no hope for Donald Trump. It's all over. And yet you listen to them, you listen to them carefully, particularly what they say about this Texas lawsuit. And that's the, I guess in their minds, that's the one lingering worry that they have. That's why they're all pouncing on that, calling it the garbage suit, calling it seditious or whatever else it is. And you wonder if maybe the media turned on Joe Biden just a little bit too early. One wonders. These justices. And again, I don't want to rule out other ways that God might flip this. But, you know, it's been a pretty fascinating week of news events. A lot has happened just in the last 36 to 48 hours. And these justices at the Supreme Court, I mean, they're human beings as well. I'm sure several of them suspect, based upon that brief that Texas filed on Monday night, that there was widespread fraud in these four or five states in particular. And then added to that, look at what those justices are viewing this week. This is a future president, potentially, that is compromised by the communist Chinese state. Clearly, he's been compromised. He has, and his family have, they have changed the goalposts four and five, six times. You heard the montage earlier. Not one scintilla of evidence. Nothing. And then, of course, along the way, there were some business dealings. I didn't have anything to do with them. And then, of course, Bob Alinsky. One of the reasons Bob Alinsky came forward is he heard all the lies that the Biden people were out there saying. That Joe Biden didn't know anything about this. He was the big guy. He was the one getting the 10% cut. He was the one getting a big percentage of all of this money that was being laundered. And wouldn't you know it, it's more than a tax issue. It's money laundering. It's securities violations. It's things that rise to the level of treason, really. And here are the media abandoning the Biden camp en masse. Why would they do it at this precise moment? And did they do it just a little bit too early? You listen to them talk about this lawsuit. One reporter at CNN said that it was a garbage suit. It's not a strong case. There's nothing in this case that it's just going to be immediately dismissed, thrown out. The Pennsylvania brief filed yesterday in response to the Texas complaint. Listen to this verbiage. This is at the start of the brief. It says, since Election Day, state and federal courts throughout the country have been flooded with frivolous lawsuits aimed at disenfranchising large swaths of voters and undermining the legitimacy of the election. The state of Texas has now added its voice to the cacophony of bogus claims. Texas seeks to invalidate elections in four states for yielding results with which it disagrees. Its request for this court to exercise its original jurisdiction and then anoint Texas's preferred candidate for president is legally indefensible and is an affront to principles of constitutional democracy. This, by the way, was penned by Josh Shapiro. He's the Pennsylvania AG. I'm sure he had other helpers too, but he's the Pennsylvania AG who said before the election, there's no way Trump's winning Pennsylvania. He's going to lose Pennsylvania. This was not a commentator. This was the Attorney General of Pennsylvania coming out and dogmatically saying that Trump would lose that state. It says what Texas is doing in this proceeding is to ask this court to reconsider a mass of baseless claims about problems with an election that have already been considered and rejected by this court and the other courts. So you have to think that the media, that they were just sitting back and, okay, it was going to be contested. They made the big announcement on November 7th. All of these cases, 40, 50 cases being dismissed from the courts. And then they come up to the safe harbor deadline. They know that the vote's coming up for the Electoral College. And they thought, all right, now we're in the clear. Now we can abandon the Biden family. Now we can get rid of this candidate that we didn't really like ourselves. Obama, the kingmaker, he wanted Kamala. He wanted her in there from the beginning. He's the one that's out on the book tour. He's the one that's giving all these sound bites. He's the one that's talking about being the puppet master. He's the one that lives just down the street from the White House. All roads lead to the Obama administration. All roads lead to Antiochus. This Pennsylvania brief says Texas's effort to get this court to pick the next president has no basis in law or fact. The court should not abide this seditious abuse of the judicial process and should send a clear and unmistakable signal that such abuse must never be replicated. I mean, this is sedition. And the media, they're quick to pick up on this type of language. Listen to Jake Tapper, the one who's leading the charge to take down Biden. Listen to him, his commentary on the garbage lawsuit. Clip six.
I mean, I'm stunned. More than half of the Republicans in the House have signed on to this lawsuit that legal experts, conservative legal experts, have said is a garbage lawsuit, is insane, would set horrific precedents. Well, it's just absolutely undemocratic. I mean, it is seditious. These members of Congress and these attorneys general, they're going to be forever associated with this crap, with this insane, un-American, undemocratic lawsuit.
Wow. I mean, that's quite a reaction. There's quite a few states that don't agree with him. They don't think it's insane or garbage. He mentioned the 106 Republicans from the House, about half the Republican Party in the House of Representatives. They've also, it's 20 states now. I think Alaska's joined the mix. And you've got six of them that are actually intervening in the case. In other words, they're joining the lawsuit. The others have filed the amicus briefs that say they support it. So all of this support, and then now that, of course, the Democrats are responding in kind, they're coming forward with all of their amicus briefs, the blue states. So, I mean, it's blue states against red states. But look, why would all of these people be joining the lawsuit on the one hand? If it was just, bogus garbage insanity, I think they're concerned. I think they're worried. We might even hear something from the Supreme Court today. It makes you wonder, though, if they're abandoning the Biden family just a little bit too soon. When we come back, we have saved a little bit of time for a study into the prophet Elijah and his stay with the widow woman from Zidon. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Do you believe the United States of America has been mainly a positive force in the world for most of its history? Do you believe that America was at one time a great nation? The United States of America was founded on many biblical principles that were incorporated into the Constitution. This lent to its success and positive influence in the world. But the America of then is not the America of today. To anyone examining the current state of America, this should be alarming. It has been a great nation in time past and is experiencing a temporary resurgence in these end times, but it will only be exactly that, temporary. Our free booklet, Great Again, will explain America's status. It will prove that God has been intimately involved in the rise and resurgence of America under President Donald Trump. It will also explain why God is saving America temporarily, how he was doing it, and what is yet to come in America. There is a spiritual dimension to America's rise and decline as a superpower. This free booklet will explain this dimension and how God will soon make America truly great again. Request your free copy of our book, Great Again, at our website, thetrumpet.com.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Just saw this tweet from Candace Owens. She said, currently we are on track for less total deaths in 2020 than in 2019. Science has turned political. Coronavirus is not in any way novel compared to other viruses. These lockdowns have been nothing but an intentional power grab from globalists. She says finally, Big Pharma is evil. Pretty amazing. The level of insanity this year. Total lockdown, nationwide lockdowns over the flu. The flu, which has always been deadly. Some strains of it more deadlier than others. But to shut down entire nations for this kind of a disease, what kind of a power grab has this been? Not just in the United States, all over the world. Well, this subject of Elijah, last week I wrote this trumpet brief on Elijah and Elisha, these two prophets. You can read about them right in the middle of all this history in the book of Kings. All this history of Israel's kings, and then right there embedded into the middle of the story, as it should be, really, when you think of it from God's perspective, you have quite a lot of material on these two prophets, and that's because these two prophets were forerunners of two servants that would appear in the last days, as I wrote about in that trumpet brief last week. You go back to 1927 and the beginning of Herbert Armstrong's conversion and his ministry that would soon follow and carry it right up through to today, almost a century, with Mr. Armstrong preaching the true gospel that Jesus Christ preached. And my father has continued right on in Mr. Armstrong's steps since the late 1980s. Jesus tells us something, a little something about the Elijah work. In Luke chapter 4, verse 25, it says, But I tell you of a truth, many widows were in Israel in the days of Elijah, when the heaven was shut up 3 years and 6 months, when great famine was through all the land. There were a lot of widows throughout Israel at that time. It says in verse 26, But unto none of them was Elijah sent, save unto Sarepta, a city of Zidon, unto a woman that was a widow. So Christ is speaking with these Jews, and he's setting them straight on their history, saying that, look, Elijah, anciently, he wasn't sent to, you know, to shake the nation of Israel. He was known. I mean, the kings of Israel, they were familiar with him. Certainly Ahab, he knew about the prophet Elijah. But Elijah wasn't leading large multitudes of people. He was here for a time. I think the Bible indicates 3 years, just with this woman and her son in Sidon. The history is covered in 1 Kings 17. Let's notice this. It says, 1 Kings 17:1 says, And Elijah the Tishbite, who was of the inhabitants of Gilead, said unto Ahab, As the eternal God of Israel lives, before whom I stand, there shall not be dew nor rain these years, but according to my word. So here comes this prophet of God announcing to this Israelite king, this evil king, and there was all kinds of political and moral and religious strife in the land at that time, lots of sin. And so Elijah comes and says that there's going to be a severe famine and drought coming from God because of our sins, our many sins. It says in verse 2, And the word of the Eternal came to him, saying, Get thee hence, and turn you eastward, and hide yourself by the brook Cherith, that is before Jordan. And it shall be that you shall drink of the brook, and I have commanded the ravens to feed you there. So he went and did according unto the Eternal, the word of the Eternal, and he dwelt by the brook. Well, he was at this brook, fed by birds miraculously, and then the brook dries up, and he needs to find another place of refuge. Verse 7, it says, And it came to pass after a while that the brook dried up, because there had been no rain in the land. And the word of the Eternal came unto him, saying, Arise, get you to Zarephath, which belongs to Zidon, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain you. So here is this great prophet of God doing God's work, fulfilling God's will telling an Israelite king, prophesying that a famine was coming. And he had to be looked after. His sustenance came from a poor widow woman. Not even in an Israelite area, in fact. It was in Zidon, as I just read to you. Verse 10, so he arose and went to Zarephath. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, the widow woman was there gathering sticks. And he called to her, and he said, fetch me, I pray you, a little water in a vessel that I may drink. See, the Jews of Christ's day, they misunderstood this history. They sort of revised it to be something like, well, these great prophets of God, they had these large followings, and for the most part, people accepted them as these great teachers. In fact, the people rejected them. For the most part, the people rejected them. They didn't heed their warnings. So here he is seeking refuge with this poor widow woman. Let me read to you what it says in one commentary. The person appointed to entertain Elijah is not one of the rich or great men of Sidon, but a poor widow woman in want and desolate is made both able and willing to sustain him. It says, it's God's way and it is his glory to make use of and to put honor upon the weak and the foolish things of the world. The weak and the foolish things. Think of 1 Corinthians 1, where Paul says that that's who God chooses. He chooses the weak and the base. He chooses the lowly and the foolish in order to confound the mighty and the wise. That's at the end of 1 Corinthians 1. God will just raise up a bunch of nobodies who are willing to do his work, who are willing to walk by faith, who put their trust and their faith and their confidence in God. At a time when so few people are willing to do that, the highly educated in many cases, in most cases, there's a few exceptions, they're too educated for their own good. They think they know more than they do. And the higher you go up in education, in most cases, the farther removed you are from God and his truth. You think academia looks upon the Bible as the textbook that it is? Of course not. They reject the Bible. They ridicule the Bible. Verse 11 in 1 Kings 17, it says, and as she was going to fetch it, he called her and he said, bring me, I pray you, a morsel of bread in your hand. And she said, as the Lord your God lives, I have not a cake, but an handful of meal in a barrel and a little oil in a cruse. And behold, I'm gathering two sticks and that I may go and dress it for me and my son that we may eat it and die, she says. So they didn't have much. They were barely surviving themselves. It says, and Elijah said to her, fear not, go and do as you have said, but make me, therefore, a little cake first, and bring it unto me. And after, make for you and for your son. For thus says the eternal God of Israel, the barrel of meal shall not waste. It's not going to waste away. Neither shall the cruse of oil fail until the day that the eternal sends rain upon the earth. So this was a real test for this woman and for her son. God wanted to teach her a lesson in faith. He wanted to teach her a little something about the work of God in a time of trial and test, in a time of famine and drought. Elijah essentially said to her, look, just put God and his work first. Go ahead and prepare this meal for God's prophet first. And then God will look after you and your son. God will take care of you and your son. Just make sure that you have Matthew 6:33 as your focus. That's what he was teaching her. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and God will supply your every need. It's a powerful lesson It tells us a little something, too, about God and how he's not a respecter of persons. This was a Gentile widow in the middle of Sidon. God could have sent Elijah to a Gentile Israelite. He could have, as the commentary brings out, he could have sent him to a prominent Israelite's home. Instead, he sent his prophet to a woman that didn't really have anything to help Elijah with. God provided for all of them, all three of them. And it shows us, too, how God's prophet was there saying, all right, God wants me to go here, I'll go here. This is God's order. This is God's command. And so I'm going to obey. And you have to think, the world around them, after severe drought and famine, there were a lot of people, I'm sure, panicking. There were a lot of people, I'm sure, getting all caught up into evil behavior just to look out for themselves, just to look out for their own. And here was God teaching Elijah, teaching this widow woman, and teaching her son to put their faith and trust in God and to not panic when everyone around them is panicking. To not panic, to think straight when everyone else was getting caught up in a little bit of insanity. Verse 15, it says, and she went and did according to the saying of Elijah. And she and he and her house did eat many days, and the barrel of meal wasted not, it says. Neither did the cruse of oil fail, according to the word of the Eternal, which he had spoke by Elijah. So miraculously, God supplied their needs, miraculously, just like he rained manna from heaven. Food that came down to feed the Israelites. Why did God do this? Well, Moses said in Deuteronomy 8, and Jesus said in Matthew 4, God fed the Israelites this way, and we can take the same lesson away from this account in 1 Kings 17. He fed the Israelites the way that he did in the wilderness to teach them that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. What a valuable lesson this is to remind us of the fact that we're feeding on the words of God. We're feeding on the truth of God. We're feeding on the knowledge of God. And this is how we remain healthy and fit, spiritually speaking. Blessed are they, Jesus said, who do hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. If you bring a hungry appetite to your Bible study, to your prayer life, God will fill. He'll fill us with spiritual food. Verse 17 here, it says, and it came to pass after these things that the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, fell sick, and his sickness was so sore that there was no breath left in him. And she said unto Elijah, what have I to do with you, O you man of God? Are you come unto me to call my sin to remembrance and to slay my son? So she wavered a little bit here in her faith. The pressure, no doubt, was pretty intense. And of course, the trial of losing her son, of seeing her son get sick and die, that's not easy for a mother. Verse 19, it says, and he said to her, give me your son. And he took him out of her bosom and carried him up into a loft where he abode and laid him upon his own bed. And he cried unto the Eternal and said, O Lord, my God, have you also brought evil upon the widow with whom I sojourn by slaying her son? And he stretched himself upon the child three times and he cried unto the Eternal and said, O Lord, my God, I pray you, let this child's soul come unto him again. And the Eternal heard the voice of Elijah, and the soul of the child came unto him, into him again, and he revived. And so this This young man came right back to life. God resurrected him from the dead. Verse 23 says, "And Elijah took the child and brought him down out of the chamber into the house and delivered him unto his mother. And Elijah said, 'See, your son lives.' And the woman said to Elijah, 'Now by this I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Eternal is in your mouth,'" or rather, "the word of the Eternal in your mouth is truth." It is truth. He spoke the truth. There's a verse in the New Testament, in the Gospels, that talks about John the Baptist. He performed no miracle, but everything he said was the truth. And so you can search for God's work. Search and search and search. How are you going to find it? Well, you're going to find it when you understand a little bit more about the work of Elijah, the original one, the one that came in these last days. John the Baptist, of course, came in the spirit of Elijah. These prophets came primarily to reveal God. He was just with one poor little widow for years. He revealed the true God to her. He spoke the truth. John the Baptist did as well. Most people rejected the prophet Elijah. Most of them rejected John the Baptist. But they were nevertheless great men of God, doing God's work in a world filled with darkness. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you Monday.